Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Metz.
Thank you for joining us on MoneyWeb at Midday. Over the next 30 minutes, I'll cut through the noise and go beyond the headlines, bringing you insight and analysis from leaders and decision makers shaping South Africa's future. Whether you're listening live or on demand, this is where you stay informed, equipped, and ahead. Coming up on the program today, claims of container price cartels. The Competition Commission explains its next move. Telcos brace for cyber, climate and capital shocks in a new global perma-crisis. Black Friday goes mobile as Apple Pay and Samsung Pay surge in South Africa. And two-thirds of South African SMEs plan price hikes as operating costs climb. It's Friday, the 5th of December. You might have read that South Africa's Competition Commission has moved to prosecute eight of the world's biggest shipping lines, including Maersk and CMA CGM, for allegedly running a decade-long price-fixing cartel on global routes. The commission claims the companies colluded on general rate increases. Well, with me now is the head of the cartels division at the Competition Commission, Makgale Mohlala. Makgale, a very warm welcome to you. The commission alleging collusion across an entire decade. Explain to us what is alleged to have happened and how such a large coordinated operation has escaped detection for such a long time.
Yeah, indeed, the commission referred a case against the shipping liners, eight of them, Maersk, COSCO, Evergreen, K-Line, Mitsui, MSC, and PIL, for colluding from 2008 to 2018 by increasing what they call general rate increase at the same day with the same amount. So this is the rate that they apply every year. They increase the rate of the cargoes they transport from South Africa to Asia, from Asia to South Africa. So what they were doing is that they were agreeing on the amount they are going to increase every time there is time for them to increase. So they've done this from 2008 to 2018. So we raided them in 2016 after we got information that they are engaged in this. So we have been going through the data that we seized, and the data indicated to us that indeed this is what they did. Hence, we referred the case to the tribunal for prosecution.
These are some of the world's most sophisticated logistics companies. I'm curious to know what gives you confidence that this was deliberate, coordinated price fixing and not just parallel market behavior?
Well, it is the evidence that gives us the confidence, Jeremy, because you can have eight sophisticated logistic companies increasing their prices at the same time with the same amount over a period of a decade. It cannot be parallelism. But also, they were announcing, you know, we've got actual prices, we've got the price increase letters. They were announcing the increases at the same time. So our evidence clearly indicates that there has been a coordination. There's more evidence which we have pleaded in the referral. They will see it. But it's the evidence that gives us the confidence.
The conduct, if I understand this, is said to have ended in 2018. Why is prosecution only happening now? And does that delay weaken the case in any way?
Yeah, so the 2018 is what our evidence indicate. It may well be that it has gone beyond that. So we'll see during trial whether the conduct went beyond 2018. But it's a case that unfortunately it's complex, it's huge, and in between we had challenges with teams resigning, leaving the employ of the commission. We've got to reallocate new teams. That takes time, but you also had COVID that interrupted that investigation. So those are the kind of things that contributed to the time we took to finalize, but it doesn't in any way compromise the case.
Well, two of the companies flatly deny wrongdoing. How strong is the commission's case if the big players push back legally?
Well, based on the evidence we have, and which in the main we have pleaded it for them to see, I would say maybe it's the publicity stunt to deny, but they have to answer to the complaint referral and deny there so that we can see the basis for their denial, whether they're also denying the evidence that implicates them.
The alleged cartel, if I understand it, operated on routes critical to South Africa's import and export economy. Has the commission in any way quantified how much consumers and exporters may have overpaid?
Not at this stage, Jeremy, not at this stage. Usually the quantification is done at the prosecution stage when we have actually the trial stage. But we know that cartels in their very nature are designed to inflate prices. So in this case, the exporters of goods from South Africa have paid exorbitant price for the transportation of those goods. And when those goods, wherever they land, they will be sold expensively and they will render them, you know, not competitive compared to their competitors on the other side. When it comes to the imports, the landed imports here, so they will be also expensive because of the inclusion of the transport costs, which are inflated by this cartel. So the ordinary consumers that buy those imported goods, they were paying a lot, which would have been as a result of the transport costs directly linked to the cartel.
What's the next step if the tribunal rules against these shipping lines? What happens next?
Well, if the tribunal found them guilty, it has to then impose a penalty. We have requested the maximum penalty allowed in terms of the law, which is 10% of their annual turnover.
That could run into tens, if not hundreds of millions of rands. Global shipping, we know, is dominated by a small number of very large players. Do we realistically have the regulatory muscle to challenge them, do you think?
We do. Our muscle is the law. So we it's not the size, it's the law. The law gives us the powers, and we are using those powers to prosecute them, and we will see to it that our case succeeds in at the tribunal.
South African exporters, Mkhale, we know, struggle with competitiveness anyway. Do you have any sense of how much damage this cartel has done to the country's trade position?
Well, like I said, we have not quantified. But what we can say in general is that cartels in their very nature inflate prices. So the price that they were paying to transport their goods, it's a price that is inflated by the cartel. So there is some overcharge that the cartel derived when transporting goods on behalf of those exporters. That one we can pretty much say, but we can't quantify at this stage.
And just finally, the commission says dismantling the cartel will improve competitiveness. I understand that, but are there safeguards now in place to prevent another decade, possibly, of alleged hidden coordination among global liners?
Well, the safeguard is that it's in the system itself. If the cartel is continuing and customers are being harmed and they become aware of it, they must approach the commission. So we will then, even the cartelists themselves, they know we have a program, a corporate leniency program. If someone is trying to get them back into the cartel, they can always approach us so that we continue disrupting it and stopping it.
Well, we'll follow this with a great deal of interest. Mkhale Mohlala, thank you very much indeed. Head of the Cartels Division at the Competition Commission, I do appreciate your time.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
A new BDO Global survey is warning that telecom operators and data centers worldwide are being hit by a perfect storm of cyber threats, climate shocks, and rising financial strain. The 2025-26 Telecommunications Risk Factor Report is showing a dramatic shift. Risk is no longer about regulatory compliance, but about immediate threats to business continuity itself. Let's explore this in a little more detail. I'm in conversation with Carl Bosman, Director, Risk Advisory Services and Telecommunications Lead at BDO South Africa. Carl, a very warm welcome. The survey calls this a perma-crisis environment, direct quote. What does that mean for telecom operators that already are operating under a degree of real pressure?
Thanks, Jeremy. So maybe let me just start with perma-crisis and really what we're talking about over there. So the perma-crisis really refers to continuous overlapping shocks. Now, in the context of a telco, that means we're talking about cyber incidents, extreme weather, financial volatility, regulatory shifts, and supply chain fragility. It's all happening at the same time. Bring that closer into South Africa, that's compounded by energy instability, although it has been better recently. We've got infrastructure pressure, we've got increased competitive disruption, and really operators are just faced with all of these risks at the same time. You cannot therefore look at risks at once a year when you pull out your risk register. It's something that you need to be on top of all of the time. It's shifting from day to day.
Let's look at South Africa in particular. It faces energy instability, Carl, on top of cyber and climate risks. Are local operators, do you think, more exposed than their global peers, or am I oversimplifying it slightly?
No, Jeremy, I don't think you're oversimplifying anything at all. You're 100% right. I mean, certainly our local operators have, over the course of the past couple of years, invested huge amounts of money in making sure that all of our towers are properly secured, number one. And the reason they need to be secured is because we've had to go and put a whole bunch of batteries and backup supplies into those towers to keep our networks up and running. So they make them huge targets for quite frankly, petty criminals who just want the batteries to try and sell them for quick cash. So yes, we're definitely more exposed in South Africa.
And add to that, Carl, climate pressure, which has surged, the report says, from a long-term ESG concern to a real operational threat. Again, do you think with regard to that, telcos are doing enough to adapt their infrastructure?
Well, quite frankly, I think they have to. We're seeing significant impacts from flooding, from heat waves, from storms, maybe not so much in South Africa, but certainly globally, we're seeing those kind of events taking place. Now, what that means is the minute you have an outage, it doesn't affect two or three people. It affects thousands of customers at once. So really what's happening is all our telcos are having to move from these long-term ESG discussions and trying to do things as best they can to hardening sites now, improving energy redundancy immediately, reassessing their water usage, their land use exposure. All of that becomes an immediate requirement for them. Yeah, and right now.
And cyber attacks, if I read the report correctly, now the top global risk. I guess it begs the question, are operators underestimating, Carl, how quickly cyber threats are evolving?
Well, we can't really talk about cyber without talking about AI now, can we? Mm. So what's happening is that we're seeing a growth in both volume and sophistication because of AI. Now, we need to remember that the telcos are really, really high-value targets because they carry national-level data that support critical services. So we've expanded our attack surface. If you think about all the IoT things, the Internet of Things, we've looked at the expansion of 5G, cloud, all of that kind of things. So all of those attackers have got a much broader network for them to target. So we need to focus on strengthening our defenses and modernizing our networks all at the same time.
And the problem here, Carl, is that these risks, as you've outlined to me, require heavy capital investment. Again, are operators financially strong enough to fund the resilience, do you think, at the pace that's required?
Well, different telcos are treating this a little bit differently, and we're finding a couple of the telco operators previously used to house all of their operations in one entity, And that entity would be your telco operator. They would also own the infrastructure, be it fiber or it might be the cell phone towers. And really what we're seeing in a lot of companies now is they're separating those operations off so that you will have an infrastructure owning company with a specific shareholder base behind it that's looking for a different return from your traditional telco operator. Now, having said that, we're finding that, as you say, the capital required to invest in these things is significant. And our telcos need to look at different ways to monetize that capital investment. So they're struggling with it, if I'm perfectly honest. We're seeing everybody across the globe is struggling to get that monetization right, because once you've gone out and you've invested in the technology, and let's use 5G as an example, we're already looking at 6G and potentially getting that out by 2030. So we've got to make sure that all of the investment that's gone into 5G is recovered before you move on to the next technology, which is a big ask.
It's also about a radical rethink. So, for instance, data centers, the report says, face even sharper financial and climate risks than telcos. Should South Africa be rethinking its current data hosting strategy, do you think?
I don't. No, I think we definitely need to focus on data centers. We've seen huge investment from the likes of Google, from Amazon Web Services. All of those big international companies are setting up data centers in South Africa. We're seeing our telcos are hosting plenty of data centers themselves. Now, they do, as you say, they require a significant investment a significant capital investment. And that's because all those data centers, first of all, to build them is extremely expensive. But then we also need to make sure that they're properly cooled and that they're properly powered. And that's where the big investment comes from their side. So no, I think we need to keep going with that. And I think we need to focus on capital investments in data centers. It's something that we all need in South Africa.
It's called the 2025-26 Telecommunications Risk Factor Report. I've been in conversation with Carl Bosman, Director of Risk Advisory Services and Telecommunications Lead at BDO South Africa. Carl, thank you very much.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
New Black Friday data from Payfast shows South Africans are shifting rapidly towards digital-first shopping, with mobile wallets like Apple Pay and Samsung Pay emerging as this year's big winners, particularly around Black Friday. While basket sizes edged up modestly, I think the real story is how shoppers are spread when it comes to spend across lifestyle categories, and they've also embraced fast tap-and-go checkout options. So is this something which is sustainable? Let's find out from Mpho Sadiki, Managing Director, Merchant Services Africa, Payfast Network International. Mpho, welcome to you. Your data shows mobile wallets up more than 30%. That's a fairly impressive statistic. Are we finally at a tipping point, do you think, for tap-and-go payments?
I think we are. And I mean, if you look at it, especially from an online payments perspective, a couple of years ago, you wouldn't have had people using things like Apple Pay and Samsung Pay to check out on online websites. So what we've seen this year is that on a year-on-year basis, about 30% up on both payment methods, which just shows you that consumers are really shifting their spend patterns or checkout patterns primarily to enjoy the convenience of speed, the convenience of security that these payment wallets provide. And I think that will automatically translate into in-person payments, where we'll all, over time start to use more and more of our mobile wallets to tap on devices.
Too early, of course, though, to call the death of the credit card.
I think similarly to calling the death of cash, right? So I think it's too early to call that. I think both will coexist, but convenience will drive what is the choice the customer picks. And my bet and my personal bet is always go for convenience. So I'm definitely the guy that uses my phone to tap out, and I'm definitely going to be the guy that will use less and less cash. Don't think we can call at the end of cards, yeah?
But not quite yet, but at some point, I would imagine in the next couple of years, traditional payment rails will start to lose a degree of relevance.
Correct. I think you'll have a tip-over point where, especially I think with the younger generations who are more digitally savvy, I think the more they spend most of their time on digital devices, the more you will see that tip over happening in the next few years. Yeah.
And Paul, do you think that merchants then are adapting quickly enough to the shift towards mobile first shopping?
I believe they are. I think we see it just, and it maybe it's by the nature of our business, because we, of course, deliver online and digital payment services. We see that merchants are truly embracing the need to not only be present online, which is again drives digital spend, but also to adopt in physical store terminals and devices that are digital ready. So I do think across the vast spectrum of merchants, be that enterprise or SME merchants, you are seeing more and more merchants embracing the need to have digital payments methods enabled in their ecosystem. And yes, we'll see more and more cashless centers, I think, in the coming years. But that will take some time.
And no one, of course, can stop the march of time. But I also guess the rapid rise of digital payment also increases fraud risks. And again, one's got to ask the question as to whether merchants are fully prepared for that. I would suggest probably not quite.
Yeah, it's a bit of both, right? So for we do our part, both as payments processors and banks as issuers, to ensure that there is enough security on payments checkout, whether through confirmation by the payer, whether through 3DS and so on and so forth. So that's the part we do. But I think from a merchant point of view, it's also critical that they, reinforce their own systems to ensure that you are able to pick up anything that is suspicious that probably would have been missed by both the payments provider or from a payer perspective, where the person is actually that is supposed to be paying has also been compromised. So I think it's a tri-party exercise, both the merchant, the payment service provider, and of course the payment issuer, which is in this case is the cardholders bank. So all three of us play our part. But I think for merchants, it's still a new area for them to scale up on and really be on top of their game. Yeah.
Let me pivot slightly to some of the other data that you've gathered around this Black Friday time. Basket values, as I said in the introduction, rising modestly. Are consumers, do you think, spending cautiously or simply shopping a little smarter?
I think it is the latter. I think consumers are spending smarter. You will note that we've also observed that Black Friday has now shifted to Black Week, if you were to call it that, Black Friday Week. And I think consumers are spending more smarter, looking at categories that really make sense on a very tight budget. So we're seeing clothing, specialty retail, and in some cases electronics, where the basket sizes where consumers spend on. So I think that's what consumers are doing, looking at how far can I stretch my 1 rand, and looking at categories that really truly contribute to what they're looking for at that point in time.
And talking about what they're looking for, you also say that Black Friday sets the tone for the festive season. Tone do you think has been set as we rapidly approach Christmas?
I think what we observed already this week is that momentum continues. So we're seeing, again, continued growth on a year-on-year basis in terms of spend across all our various merchant categories. And we do believe that going into the next 2 weeks, there is still an opportunity for consumers to continue spending, especially when it comes to Christmas gifting and all of the things that are really critical at that point in time. But again, as the year closes, then you move into the reopening of schools. So I think the momentum is set. This season, this period over the years has always been a period that runs between the latter part of November all the way through December and into early January, where you just see sustained momentum of spend across various categories. So I think the right tone is there, and we're seeing it already in week one of December, and we do anticipate that it will continue.
Paul Siddiqui, thank you very much indeed. I'm going to leave it there. I do appreciate your time and your insights.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, according to the latest Small Business Growth Index, more than two-thirds of South African small and medium enterprises plan to raise prices by up to 10% over the next 6 months. It seems it's a desperate bid to stay afloat under mounting cost pressures. The survey covering more than 2,000 SMEs reveals a sector under real and significant strain. Fewer than 4 in 10 believe they can survive beyond a year without external support. I want to explore this in a little more detail. I'm in conversation now with Professor Karel van Aert, who is from UNISA's Bureau for Market Research. Professor, a very warm welcome. 67% of SMEs plan to raise prices. How many expect sales to actually survive the squeeze, and at what cost do you think to demand?
Well, what we're seeing at the moment is that, as you indicated, that businesses are really under cost pressures, and quite a lot have indicated that they've actually got a variety of increased costs that they are facing at the moment. It's not just from raw materials, but it's also from utilities. It's also from certain aspects of administrative costs, transport costs. And so they indicated that they want to raise their prices, but there's also, as you indicated, a concern from their side that by doing so, they will dampen demand. So they actually caught at the moment between a rock and a hard place, because on the one hand, to stay afloat, they have to increase prices, but they know that they could be negatively impacting on their consumer base. What's really interesting from this survey is that only about a third of businesses are indicating that they are really growing at the moment. And so you've got 67% that really are under quite a lot of pressure, and that's one of the main reasons why they want to increase their prices.
And Professor, this is worrying because entities of this size make a significant contribution not only to the economy, but also to jobs.
That's correct, because if you have a look, for example, at your small business sector in South Africa, that more than two-thirds of jobs actually can be explained by small business activity in South Africa. And here especially, that's where you've got a situation where nearly half of businesses indicate that they won't make it for more than a year if there's no, if there's not intervention to improve this situation. This is really problematic within the South African situation. But there is some good news as well. And that good news is that compared to the first half of the year, there's a clear indication that more businesses are becoming more optimistic about future growth prospects, and quite a lot of them are very positive about 2026.
That seems to be such a contradiction. On the one hand, they're really struggling. On the other hand, there's a degree of optimism. How do they justify that?
Well, I think what we often see with economic expectations, because the Bureau also run the Economist of the Year competition, we often see that right at the beginning of the year that economists, businesses are incredibly positive about the coming year. But as the year starts to unfold, and there's more and more black swan events, there's more and more crises, there's more and more cost pressures, there's dampened demand, then businesses become more concerned, more worried, etc. So this is exactly what we're expecting at the moment, because quite a lot of businesses are currently reporting on their lived experience of really being under strain, while, for example, when they look into the future, they're more positive. Just on businesses experiencing a strain at the moment, there's about 9% of businesses that face that indicated that they face a closure within the next year. But as you say, that when you look, for example, at their future expectations, there's still some hope for the year that's coming.
Also, a real blow here for consumers, because as you've outlined, many SMEs struggling under cost pressure, raising prices, isn't that just shifting hardship to consumers and particularly vulnerable and smaller households that do business with these SMEs?
Yes, to a very large extent, that will be exactly that. But the problem is that we've been tracking businesses for quite some time. And what's very clear from businesses is that quite a lot of businesses for quite a few years did not pass full costs onto consumers. And so it's very clear that their margins have actually been shrinking. And when you look, for example, at business turnover of the businesses that we canvassed, only 34% of them are actually indicating that they are experiencing turnover growth at the moment. And one of the main reasons of that is this cost pressures that's not being passed on to consumers.
Professor, you spoke about intervention. So what kind of outside support would meaningfully help small businesses then?
Well, businesses were the small businesses were actually very precise on exactly what they require. And so the first aspect that was indicated by small businesses is that they need affordable finance. And in this case, it was about 47% of businesses that indicated that they desperately need that. Then also about 37% of businesses indicating that they need a reduction of the bureaucracy and the red tape. And quite a lot of them also refer to a very business and friendly environment in which they want they are operating. For example, that they feel that the infrastructure is also failing, that there's not support from government. Then 29% indicated a VAT reduction. But a very interesting one here is that we also find a very large number of them indicating that they need relief from high energy prices. And so there they were looking specifically at government to ensure that there's some relief with respect to both electricity costs as well as fuel costs.
Professor, let me pick you up on affordable finance. That seems to be the big worry. The problem I would suggest to you is that that puts a huge amount of risk on the lenders, in other words, the banks, and the banks are not going to take a risk on companies that are struggling. So it really is a vicious circle, isn't it?
It is to a very large extent. And remember, what you've got at the moment is that there's a wide range of finance institutions providing credit to small businesses. And that's not just your banks, but there's also quite a lot of fintechs at the moment. And that's in that space, and a wide range of other credit providers as well. And the one thing that's clear is that when you look at the interest rates, that's being asked, that it's fairly high, and especially with businesses that's already under risk, that debt repayments that they need to do put them under additional risk. So the response of a lot of businesses is that they do have access to finance, but it's more expensive finance. And then when it comes to that time, for example, that they desperately need to buy new capital equipment or to obtain more stock or to make infrastructure investments, that they don't do it simply because of the fact that they believe that the credit being provided is more expensive for them.
I'm going to leave it there, Professor Karel van Aart. Thank you very much indeed from UNISA's Bureau for Market Research. I do appreciate your time. And that's where we are going to leave it for today and for the week. You've been listening to MoneyWeb at Midday. We are here every weekday at noon with the latest in current affairs, the economy and policy. You can always catch the podcast version a little later. Thank you for making us part of your day. Until next time, goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.